Welcome back to another episode of CGE Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today joining us is Laurie Turnbull, Editor-in-Chief for Canadian Government Executive Media, as well as David McLaughlin, Executive Editor with Canadian Government Executive Media. And the title of our show is Trump, Tariffs, and Trouble. And we're going to dive right in. So welcome both of you this morning to the show. I guess, David, we'll start with you.
Well, Trump has brought trouble to us. Perhaps not surprising, you know, for such a disruptive figure, political figure. He's become the disruptor in chief in America, and he's clearly taking a sledgehammer to the way the American government works and making changes there like you wouldn't believe. But he's also turning his attention abroad. He's turning his attention, surprisingly to many Canadians, to us, with these tariff threats, the out of the blue, arbitrary, capricious, really, 25% tariff threat on all Canadian goods and services. And then, you know, he's adjusted that a bit for 10% on Canadian oil and gas. But for Canadians, this has been a very troubling and roller coaster kind of week or so as he's followed through on these threats. And it's been quite remarkable to see the way the country has responded. Both, you know, there's a lot of new nationalism, but there's also the beginning, I think, of some really clear-eyed thinking and understanding of that the Canadian economy, our standard of living is really at risk here, and we need to make some changes. So a remarkable kind of set of developments economically, politically, that are taking place in the country, not because of something or someone here, but because of someone and something there in the U.S.
Laurie, you know, this is all great feedback, David. And I guess now, Laurie, my question for you would be, there's potentially two elections. We've got Doug Ford calling an election, and we have the potential of a federal election. How do you think this affects or plays out what's going on right now?
Well, it definitely does. So Trump, it has become a key focus of the Ontario election. And I think that's one of the reasons that Doug Ford called it early, because this is, I think, 16 months earlier than the scheduled election in June of 2026. I think when Ford was thinking about the math around this, he always intended to call an early election. And I think the reason was, like some other premiers, including Tim Houston in Nova Scotia, Ford wanted to go while Justin Trudeau was still prime minister, because the premiers can essentially blame Justin Trudeau, who has been for a long time the least popular politician in the country. The premiers have been able to put everything at his feet, right, and blame him for the affordability crisis, blame him for not enough transfers for health. He's been a very convenient opponent for provincial premiers. And so I think that was always Ford's plan. But now he's gone early, but with a different kind of opponent. It's not Trudeau, it's Trump. And Ford is positioning himself as, like, in some ways, a kind of a Captain Canada, even though he's the premier of Ontario. And he's taken this position, you know, that he is going to be the defender of Ontario's interests. He's going to be the defender of Ontario's auto sector. He is going to push back against what Trump is doing and be a leader in the country on those questions, which I think really elevates his campaign in Ontario. But meanwhile, even aside from that, right, Ford is taking advantage of the fact that he's far ahead in the polls. Depending on which poll you look at, he's about 50% of the popular vote, which is crazy. And the opposition parties just don't seem to be able to punch through on any of the issues, even like healthcare and education, that are always important to people. The whole threat to our economy of Trump's presidency and the threat of tariffs has taken over in people's minds as the key issue, which, again, just completely is to Ford's advantage. And it doesn't really look like the opposition parties are going to be able to have the runway to change that outcome at this point. And so I think Ford will probably get a bigger majority than he had before. Meanwhile, on the federal side, ballot question has changed entirely. This was going to be an election about Trudeau and carbon tax, and Poilievre and the Conservatives were going to walk into a huge majority. And they may well still do that. But the question now is Canada's place in the world, the relationship with the U.S., the threat of Trump's tariffs and potential expansionist tendencies, and what all of that means for us. And so I think we can see this Conservatives pivoting their messaging, because to stand up at the microphone and say Canada's broken is not the right message at a time where attachment to the country has gone way up.
Well, you know, I can see the rising nationalism, the camaraderie, the loyalty that's starting to build over this issue of the tariffs. And as we know right now, that's, I think, been suspended for about 30 days. It's like a bull in a china shop kind of approach that Mr. Trump is taking. But that being said, you know, David, the one thing that I've also heard is when it comes to talking about our northern borders, there is a problem with the level of crime that's going on, the drugs coming across the border. And although, you know, the way this issue of border security is being approached is not great, it has gotten a commitment from Prime Minister Trudeau to invest some dollars to tighten it up a little bit. I mean, that would indicate to me that there's a problem there, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes and no. I'd say there is a problem. It's not as great a problem as the U.S. sees on its southern border with Mexico. And I think that's the piece that sort of riled Canadians up a bit, because we've got equated with the obvious and problem of the U.S.'s border with Mexico, with guns and drugs and migrants, you know, coming through in very large and visible ways. So that's not the situation with Canada, but it doesn't mean we don't have a problem on this border, and we don't have a responsibility to help strengthen that border and police it better. And so, you know, we've got to just appreciate as a country that if we want to have an economic relationship with America, and America says, well, look, you know, this is a problem for us, we have to take it seriously. It's our biggest trading customer. It's like anything in business or personal relationships or other professional relationships. If your most important relationship, economic, political, social, or whatever, says, you know, this is something that concerns me, you take it seriously. So I think governments have responded properly, even if we sort of, you know, kind of gnashed our teeth a bit and said, look, we're not really the problem. Look, it's a small price to pay to literally $1.3 billion over, you know, some period of time to strengthen the border, as the federal government and other provincial governments are investing in this too, in order to preserve the most important economic input to our prosperity, which is the free trade with the United States. So it's something that we've got to kind of take into account and be thinking about in a just in a more, I'll say, mature way than perhaps we had been, you know, thinking about. And so these things are connected. And the fact that Trump is just starting, he's got a 4-year term, these kinds of things are going to come up more often than not. And we've got to, as a country, as a political system, we've got to respond better. And I think I give kudos, frankly, to all the governments for responding quickly on this in a focused way. So let's see if it works. What we really have, as you pointed out, John, we have a pause on these tariffs. We don't have the tariff threat removed. And when you look at what Trump and his team have been talking about, they haven't just been talking about tariffs as a political economic threat or lever, if you will, to get things from other governments, such as strengthening the border or things like that. They see it as a way to raise revenue. The U.S. deficit is dramatic. They want to fund tax cuts in a big way, and they need revenue. Tariffs are, for governments, revenue generators. And so there is both an ideological and a practical perspective driving the Trump administration to say, look, we need tariffs. And it wouldn't surprise me, therefore, I don't want to predict the future, because, you know, the one thing you can predict about Trump is that he's completely unpredictable. But the idea of having some kind of tariff attached to Canada at the end of this period, regardless of what we've done on the border or other things, that's not something we should rule out. I think it's more likely than not, but perhaps for other reasons.
Well, you know, Laurie, we talked a little bit about how this issue may affect some of the elections and the messaging. Let's say they don't come to a deal and the tariffs are in place. How is that going to affect government operations? What's going to change? Like, this is new ground, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there would be various stages of kind of response and reaction. So, like, if the tariffs had gone in place this past Tuesday, as Trump had threatened, then, you know, the first thing that Canada seems to be poised to do is respond with counter tariffs. And so $30 billion U.S. would have taken effect right away. And then 3 weeks later, the plan was to do another $125 billion to give sectors some time to respond and perhaps find other partners, other markets, do what they needed to do for how to manage that disruption to our supply chain. And so I think we, in the short-term period, we will see a reaction like that. We will react. The front runners for the Liberal leadership, which seems pretty clear to me to be Mark Carney right now, he and Chrystia Freeland have said they support counter tariffs. And so that's the other piece of uncertainty on our side, is in a month's time, around a month's time, we'll be looking at swearing in a new prime minister. But everybody, those front runners are saying they support counter tariffs too. So I think that would be our first response. And then there would be also some deeper moving around to see, you know, how will we respond to this in the more medium to long term? So things like we're talking about taking down barriers to interprovincial trade. That's not going to be a huge piece. It's going to be a piece, but not the whole story. And then it's going to be about finding different trading partners, expanding other relationships, finding other markets. Some of this lots of people have pointed out, ought to have been happening anyway. And so this isn't necessarily all doom and gloom. This may be a way for Canada to pursue different relationships that would help us be less dependent on the US. Because I think, you know, as much as Trump is disruptive, and he tends to do things in the most disruptive way possible, and that's part of his objective. That's what he wants to do. Even Democrats are protectionists. Even, you know, we have to assume that some more independence on our side is probably in our best interests economically anyway. I think that in terms of our own election, which could come as early as March, but could be a few more months, depending on if the Liberals and the NDP want to do a deal to keep this going a little longer, and we could talk about that. I think we are going to have to be thinking the ballot question could split different ways. On the one hand, it could split in favor of, I think, would be good conditions for the Liberals/NDP, is people might think, in a time of disruption, who do we trust to take care of us? Who do we think will roll out programs to give aid to sectors that are destabilized and things like that? On the other hand, the ballot question might split, who do you trust to manage a disrupted economy, which might go in favor of the Conservatives, because typically when the economy is the key issue, that's good news for the Conservatives electorally. I think probably, who knows, every day seems to have more uncertainty to it. So we're kind of figuring this out as we go along.
Well, and it's interesting, you're talking about the Liberal NDP possible partnership. I want to throw something out there that probably sounds way out there, but could this also bring a new player to the table? Like David, for instance, I was just before we were getting ready for the show, I was reading about Maxime Bernier. He was involved with the Harper administration. Could somebody like that or some other player arise and actually have a chance at running for election?
I honestly don't think so at this stage, certainly not in the short term. And my reasoning is all about the way that Pierre Poilievre has positioned the Conservative Party to be an attractive enough vessel, if you will, for some of that People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier's vote in the past. Poilievre has taken on some of their rhetoric, some of their issues in a way, and mainstreamed them a bit into his new conservative coalition. And we've seen the PPC vote, which was sitting at around 5% or so in the last election, is now just over 2%. So that sort of 2-3% difference is, you know, you have to assume that it's parked with the Conservatives, with Poilievre at the moment. And that is helping him get not just a majority, but is also, you know, if it stays, will help him get kind of a supermajority if the previous polls still, you know, hold true. So I think it's more unlikely, at least in my judgment experience, to see expect that there would be a third party kind of disruption that would come out. But I think it's more likely to see a disruption in the kind of issue and the way that it's framed. And so picking up on what Laurie said, it's almost like a short term and a longer term piece. So the short term kind of dynamic right now is very pro-Canada, pro-nationalistic, and respond and, you know, be assertive and aggressive and to Trump and America. But that's because we're in the moment. As time goes on, and let's just say that this is the new normal, then a bit of a shift takes place in people's minds where they start thinking about, okay, well, look, who's best to deal with this on the longer term, as Laurie, you know, pointed out. And that becomes a different kind of conversation. And so, you know, that could open up some other opportunities for some people. But I really feel that we do have the main protagonists on the table now. I expect it, you know, to be Carney. And he then becomes the question mark. And I think Canadians at this moment will give him a bit more of a look and listen than they would anybody else in the Liberal race. And we have seen some tightening. But I think overall, it still comes down to a sense of, like, do I want to have a change in people and direction from what we've had in the past, or do I want something, you know, that is just a little better than what we've had in the past? So, you know, less of the Trudeau, Justin Trudeau approach and a bit more of a more classic center left as opposed to a harder left liberal government. So I think it's going to be up to both parties, the main parties, to kind of redefine themselves a bit in the wake of Trump. And the one party we haven't been really talking about is, of course, is the NDP and Jagmeet Singh, which is disappearing from the conversation in real time. So the disruption continues. But probably to sum it up, John, probably not to see, you know, another party, another actor come out of the wings. Not at this point.
So I think this whole change could create an opportunity for message changing, which could be turn out to be a positive and for the Liberal Party, perhaps. And I think, Laurie, you've touched upon that. You know, Doug Ford, as part of some of his campaign promises, is talking about reducing 407 fees, reducing the cost of fuel. It's expensive to live in Canada right now. And this whole thing about tariffs, to me, is concerning because tariffs can lead to trade wars, and trade wars can lead to other things as well. I think it's disrupting the whole world right now. But Trump has also talked about, I don't know how real it is, but tariffs replacing taxes. Is there a possibility in Canada, Laurie, of any of the people that are running taking a couple of notes from Trump's playbook and looking or suggesting that tariffs would be good for Canada to use instead of, you know, having taxes and some of the things that we're implementing now?
I don't see that from any of our serious political actors right now.
No. It'd be pretty radical.
It would be radical and it would be nonsensical. And it would, I don't see that happening. I do think that this whole thing with Trump is not in a vacuum, like the piece around threatening tariffs on Canada, Mexico, threatening to basically blow up NAFTA. He's already put tariffs on China. This is not unconnected or disconnected from his inquiries or his thoughts that he talks about Canada being potentially a 51st state. He talks about taking over the Panama Canal, taking over Greenland. I think for him, you know, sovereignty doesn't bother him. He doesn't worry about stuff like that. He sees all of these things in terms of how to make America great. And for him, this is like a businessman talking about mergers and acquisitions. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that we need to be worried about it as much as we need to know that when he says it, I think that's what he means. Like he's not joking when he talks about the 51st state. At least I don't think he is. I think that he thinks about expansionist possibilities for the U.S. and different ways to get their financial problem solved. And I think that, you know, speaking to kind of back to one of the things that David said, I think that that is part of his plan. He wants other people to pay for America's financial problems. And so if that's what's driving the tariff threat, then we will probably not see that threat go away anytime soon, no matter what we do at the border.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. And the one thing that's been constant is shock and change. I mean, as you were just talking about that, I'm thinking about what he's proposing on the Gaza Strip, and he's proposing somebody else pays for it. I don't know how realistic it is. It's just such a different approach. But let's just come back to the tariffs and the border for a moment, if I may. You know, sometimes when you're digging through all of these things and there's a lot of saber rattling, we've talked about the northern border, we've talked about reinforcing it and firming it up, which I think probably is a good thing. You see these problems with gangs and drugs and all of the other things that are going on a very huge scale in the United States. Do you think Canada should be concerned about having some of these gangs and things that are going on? And that from that point of view, strengthening the border is probably a good idea. The means of how we're getting there, we probably don't like. But at the end of the day, would that turn out to be a good program? Should we be looking a little deeper into what's going on within our communities? Or are we fairly safe from that at this point? What do you think, David?
Well, Canada has a drug problem. We have a gangs problem. We're not immune to that by any means. And one benefit from the Trump focus on the border is that it's actually paradoxically getting us to focus internally on our fentanyl problem and realizing we have to do much better to get at the source of the problem, which isn't just the migrant piece of contraband, you know, going across the border, but it's getting at the criminal gangs and the labs and where the stuff is made, where this poison is actually made. And so, and stopping it before it becomes packaged up and sent across the border. And then, of course, doing something about on the streets where we see people injecting it and killing themselves. We've had too much of a conversation about safe injection sites and other kinds of things. In other words, like the response on the street in the inner cities, we still have to figure that out. But we've got to spend more time getting at the production, you know, the source of it and the criminality that is behind it. So to the extent that Trump has woken us up as a country to this problem, which has just felt like there's nothing we can do about it. But it is the leading, you know, cause of deaths. It is leading cause of emergency hospital admissions. So we have a problem to deal with. And so we'll see whether jurisdictions actually come together on it. But on the tariff side, I think, John, one of the remarkable things that has happened in Canada since the very divisive free trade election of 1988 is that Canadians have become free traders. We believe in the benefits of free trade. We just instinctively, where we didn't to the same degree before. So it would be a very hard political push, I think, for any leader, any party or government to say, look, we should put tariffs on ourselves on this, because it very much goes against the grain of how we see our economy working. And so that kind of mind shift, though, is that now has to happen, that pivot that has to happen in a different way. We still want trade, but we can't trust the trading relationships and the trading rules that we have in place now. And so we've got to then dig in deeper and actually get at some of these economic fundamentals of productivity and competitiveness, tax rates, and other kinds of things that we've gotten lazy about over, you know, over time. So there's a reckoning coming in many ways that Trump is forcing us onto some kind of economic reckoning. And I think that's probably a good thing, because we've covered it up. We've avoided that for too long.
Well, you know, I'm an optimist, and I believe that maybe a wake-up call and a re-examination could always lead to some positive things for Canada. I'm going to close with a final question to you both, and Lori, we'll start with you if you don't mind. So let's fast forward ahead. It's the end of March. What do you think the political platform looks like in Canada, and what do you think the relationship will be with the United States?
Well, I think that Mark Carney will be the prime minister. I think it's more likely than not that we will be in an election or close to it. I think that the key questions are going to be around the economy. I don't know whether or not Trump will have put tariffs in place by then or not. I think it's possible. If that is the case, that could happen, I guess, somewhere around March 9th, which would be where when the 30 days is up. And that's also when Carney, I think, I don't mind betting on that. I think Carney's going to win the leadership race. And when he does, you know, he could be walking into a situation where he's a new prime minister. He doesn't have a seat in the House of Commons. He's looking at either an election right away or election very shortly. And he's got to deal with this threat and this total disruption to our economy. I mean, it's going to be a really critical time for the Canadian Public Service, trying to support, you know, a government in transition at a time where we've got this massive external threat. And that will, you know, that's going to be a big test. That's going to be a critical time.
And David, you say?
Well, what Lori said, I think she's absolutely right on this. One thing I will add is that we may have that clarity and certainty about whether or not the tariffs are on, and therefore we now know what we're dealing with Trump. And the uncertainty now is generating this kind of nationalist piece, which was not going away, but it's drowning out the kinds of political conversations we had been having, carbon tax or calling an election and those kinds of things. So they seem kind of tone deaf relative to dealing with the big matter that's before us. But what if the big matter is more or less resolved and saying, okay, this is now the situation. You have tariffs, whether it's 10% or 25% or something. Then we start getting into that longer term conversation about, well, who's best not to respond to the moment, because I think that is actually showing everybody to some degree is benefiting from that, all governments, all leaders. And we're seeing the Liberals rising a little bit, at least in this. But then it pivots to what do we have to do about this, and who's got the best plan, and who is the best leader to deal with that? And if that's the case, then I'll leave it with this one kind of question for myself. I wonder whether Mark Carney might want to actually pull the plug and have an earlier election, because if he gets this bit of a lift by saying that is appearing to get that he is better positioned than anybody else to deal with the moment, the negotiating with Trump, etc., it may be to his benefit to kind of keep the uncertainty, to gamble on that uncertainty and go for an election versus a little longer term. So we have into perhaps even into the fall where, you know, a new normal comes up and it might give the conservatives a chance to find their footing again. They've lost a little bit, not a lot, but they've lost a little bit. So it'll all boil down to, as Laurie said, do we have an election now? Or do we have an election a little later? And some of that timing isn't going to be in Mark Carney's hand if he wins. It's going to be in the hands of Jagmeet Singh and the NDP and whether or not they continue to support this Liberal government in the House. The House will come back, vote of non-confidence, the government wins or loses, and that'll be the determination of whether or not we're going to the polls or not.
Well, time will certainly tell. You've been listening to CGE Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. We've been talking about Trump, tariffs, and trouble, and it's certainly been an interesting conversation. I want to thank our special guests, Laurie Turnbull, Editor-in-Chief of Canadian Government Executive Media, as well as David McLaughlin, Executive Editor with Canadian Government Executive Media. Thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thank you,
John. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Laurie.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer,